All right, we're going to start the pre-stream now. You're live and on the air. And let me get set up. I just got into my studio. And, oh, I see you sending me lots of private messages there. Hello?
Yeah.
I just got in the studio now. Somebody died on the highway, so they close it down in many areas. So.
Right. It's not enough just to pull them over on the side of the road. Well, everybody has to be involved.
No. Well, when somebody dies, then they have
to... It's an excuse to shut down traffic and make everybody suffer. I understand how it works.
Well, I'm not quite as cynical. They should investigate, so for insurance purposes. So.
Yeah, but they don't have to block traffic for miles to do that.
Well, really you only have to block one lane in Toronto, and it backs up for miles.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll... I got caught.
Every time I get behind the wheel of my car down here, it's about the most stressful, anxiety-ridden experience one can have, because the kind of driving I'm seeing now shows that people really are going crazy. They really are.
Well, I've been driving for a long time commercially, and... I don't know if they're any worse than they ever were.
No, no, no. It's entirely different when you're in a big rig.
Yeah.
When you're in a big rig, people stay away. They're smart enough to stay away.
Not always, but I drive.
Not always.
I drive my car. I drive my car too, so I get it that way too.
Well, I don't know. Maybe people are not as insane in your area as they are in mine, but I'm telling you, I have definitely discerned a whole change in the character of driving. Especially, well, it's always rush hour here. We've always got gridlock here. But I see people crossing lanes to get off on a ramp, just cut right in front of two or three lanes to cross on a ramp. I see people changing their mind in mid lane. I see a parking lot. Let me tell you something. Some of the most dangerous driving you can do here is in, you know, parking lots or shopping centers. I'm seeing it happen. Now, everybody can be in denial about it, but I'm watching it happen. So, hey.
I'm just going to try and share my screen here. Or share the tab. I'm going to have to close down. Yeah, just give me one sec. I have to close this. I'm going to close down this window. I'll come back in. Because Yandex is acting up. So we're going to start this up. Lynn is gone for a minute because I had to close the studio down. And we'll start it back up.
Jiu-jitsu or I don't know, some one of these, you know, like studio restream.
All right, I'm back. Did you?
So I gave him a link to studio restream and he said he'd experiment with it and see if it was easier to use. He said it was a little cheaper, only like $16 a month compared to what he is using.
So. Who is that? Sorry.
Well, it's somebody I ran into on Facebook who's running a lot of sites that are essentially fakeologist sites. I mean, that's what they would be for us.
Okay.
Right. And it's called, his name is Willis Butts, but he also uses the name, he uses a couple different handles, and he runs an Apollo 11, major Apollo 11 hoax page on Facebook, and also a 9/11 TV fakery, site on Facebook. It's very influential. It's got a lot of followers. It's just because you ignore Facebook, you never heard of this guy, you know.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In your mind, out of sight, out of mind. And I understand that. Actually, I'm going to prove that as soon as we start.
We're going to start in one second here. Now I got to get your music ready. So let me find your music. The Man Who Broke the Bank at Monte Carlo. Wow. What's that about?
You've never heard that song.
No.
Okay, yeah, well. All right. When were you born?
67.
Well, so what?
I got
you still should have heard it. Yeah, you still should know that song. That's all right. You must have heard it at least once, but maybe not. Have you ever heard of Gilbert and Sullivan?
Yes.
Okay. You ever heard of the Gilded Age?
Yes.
Okay. If I said the gay 90s, would you know what I was talking about? The gay
90s.
1990s? No, 1890s. They're called the gay 90s.
Okay, definitely not then.
They were called the gay 90s, and you've never heard that phrase.
No.
Right. You've never heard the 1920s referred to as the jazz age. F. Scott Fitzgerald wrote Tales of the Jazz Age about the 1920s.
Okay, I got the music started here.
Yeah, see, it's out of sight, out of mind for you. That's all right.
Well, sorry, if I don't know, I don't
know.
Yeah,
you're right. You know, nothing after 1967 exists for you, but go ahead.
Exactly. Hey, you're being harsh on the...
yeah, because I feel there's a lot of lightweight stuff going on here, but that's all right. Intellectually, but that's okay. Let's let it go.
Oh, thank you. Okay, let's get going here. I don't have time to send out alerts, so we'll start off the music.
I've just got here through Paris from the sunny southern shore. I the Monte Carlo wind just to raise me wind and rent. Dame Fortune smiled upon me as she never smiled before, and I've now just lots of money, I'm a gent. Yes, I've now just lots of rhino, I'm a gent. As I walk along the Bois Boulogne with an independent air, you'll hear the girls declare, he must be a millionaire. You'll hear them sigh and wish that I can see them wink to the other eye at the man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo. As I walk along the Bois Boulogne with an independent air, you'll hear the girls declare, he must be a millionaire. Hear them sigh and wish to die and see them wink the other eye at the man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo. I stay indoors till after lunch and then me daily walk to the great triumphal arch. It's one grand triumphal march. Observe, I observe with the keenness of a hawk. I'm a mass of money, linen, silk and starch. I'm a mass of money, linen, silk and starch. Oh, 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 oh. As I walk along the Bois Boulogne with an independent air, you'll hear the girls declare, he must be a millionaire. You will hear them sigh and wish that I would see them wink to the other eye at the man who broke the bank at Monte Carlo.
All right, good evening, everyone. There we go. Good evening. Sorry we're late tonight. It is Tuesday, June the 25th, 2024. It's the Fakeologist and the Linertel Show. That's Charles Colburn singing The Man Who Broke the Bank at Monte Carlo from 1930 on a 78 RPM record. And it's from the gay 90s. No, the 1890s, as Lynn has told me on the pre-show. Lynn, how you doing?
I'm okay. I thought it might be an appropriate theme for tonight's focus on one of these Lifetime actors. Well, he's not really an actor. You know, I guess he qualifies as a lifetime, though he was doing real business.
Okay.
A lot of money, involving a lot of money. And what prompts me to study this individual, I really owe a debt of gratitude to Jan Erik.
Oh, Jan Erik, that, right.
Yeah, for that small clip of him with John Le Bon, where he introduces the idea of the cult of Yehuda, or cult of Jews. This is an English way of saying it.
Right, because there's no
really
hard
J's.
Cult
of Yehuda.
Yeah.
Because the case I'm, there's so many of them, but the case I'm about to discuss tonight is a perfect example of the cult of Yehuda as an exploration of those groups and individuals who navigate the boundaries and borders between nations between empires, between cultures, in the course of conducting international trade. This trade has always existed from ancient times. Salt, spices, dyes, blue dye like indigo and...
Purple dye.
Of course, purple dye, which was legally restricted to, you could be arrested and executed for wearing purple in Rome, because only the emperor was allowed to wear purple, and the imperial family could wear purple.
Now everyone's wearing it in the political arena, I noticed. They actually go out of their way to wear it, I noticed.
And that should be a whole discussion on color programming and magenta. Where does magenta, which I've always thought of magenta as being more pink, but some people are conflating magenta with ultra purple.
Okay.
Which I think is closer to lavender and has a gay subtext, but that's a whole nother question. But the most important commodity that made international trade statistically significant in terms of moving large populations and significantly altering economies was, of course, the global slave trade. And so when Jan Erik is talking about the merchants and those who engaged in international trade, who often had to speak many different languages, had to be able to negotiate and navigate between the dominant empires of whatever environment they were in. In the ancient world, it was Rome in the west and Parthia or Persia in the east.
All right.
And in the medieval world, of course, it was Islam in the east. And then, of course, the Turks. And in the west, there were all kinds of Christian factions. So the individuals who were fluent enough in different languages, knew how to handle currency and convert currencies, had access to coinage, gold, silver, and would deal in all these priceless commodities, including slaves. More of this trade was centered on the Indian Ocean, because you really don't have a transatlantic trade until the Spanish, until after Columbus, basically. That's when the transatlantic trade starts. And that's mostly sugar, then tobacco, which the English cultivated in North America. Sugar, tobacco, rum. The sugar was often converted into rum or molasses. And slaves from Africa, because they needed the labor force to grow the sugar. So what we're talking about here is these individuals who are uniquely qualified to play this role of mediating.
Yes, the media. Yeah, mediating,
right.
Media, yeah.
But it isn't just the media that they mediate. It's banking, finance, and money. And the character I'm going to discuss tonight, I guess I'm going to challenge you first and ask if you even, because this is someone who I picked because he seems to have slipped below radar in the 20 or 30 years since he was famous. And I do mean famous. And I notice my screen sharing isn't really working tonight.
No. I have to share it.
Okay. Well, if you share my screen,
I have to share
it. My question to you would be is, do you remember Casino Jack? Because he is probably one of the best examples of the cult of Yehuda that I could point to as an American. I'm not seeing the screen, but...
No, it's on there.
Oh, there it is. Okay, there it is. Very good. Ah, good. So, look, I know your audience loves movies.
I love movies, and I can't even keep up with all the movies you recommend, but I do like movies.
You've never seen this one, have you?
I don't think so. It doesn't ring a bell.
This is Kevin Spacey in one of his best performances, in my opinion. He doesn't overplay it. He doesn't underplay it.
Do you think he's a great actor?
He studied the subject,
Do you think Spacey's a great actor?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that show, House of Cards, he held that show up. As soon as they canceled him, the show died. So, yeah, he understands.
Why do you think they took him out, just as an aside? Why do you think
they... Say that again?
Why do you think they brought him down? Why did they bring him down, do you think?
It might have been a humiliation ritual. He might have been getting a little bit... he might have been refusing to play ball with him. He might have turned down a contract for a film. They'll kill you for that sometimes. I mean, who knows? He might have bucked somebody in the career world.
Yeah, okay, that's
good.
Or
he might have been indiscreet. Or it might have been the fact... I'll tell you what I think it was.
Yeah.
He liked young men. That's pederasty. I don't think they were necessarily underage, but this is very, that environment, the pederastic environment, it's a snake pit.
Okay, interesting. Very interesting.
Right. An older man gets involved with younger men, and they expect something for it. And this looked like it was basically a shakedown operation against him by some of his former lovers. And they dragged him into, and of course, the courts subsequently completely reversed the original conviction in his case, and basically were saying he was innocent of these charges. They were never proven. So I chalk it up. You're asking me what I think. I chalk it up to the circles he traveled in. But there is that picture of him right next to Ghislaine Maxwell. And I believe she's sitting on the throne, the royal throne of England. And they got a picture of them together. So he was traveling in those circles anyway. But Kevin Spacey isn't really the subject of our talk tonight. Because if he were a member of the cult of Yehuda, it would strictly be on a trial basis. You know, now I'm talking about the character he plays in this movie called Casino Jack. It was, in fact, called Casino Jack, and his name was Jack Abramoff, and he was famous, and I mean famous for more than 15 minutes.
Jack Abramoff. Jack Abramoff. Yeah, he was in the White House, something, some controversy. That's all I know.
Right.
So this is a movie about
another one of these corruption scandals, right?
Oh, okay, okay. So this is okay. I gotcha.
So if you page down.
No, you're sharing. That, you're sharing the screen, so you have
okay,
to page down.
Okay, let me page down and get to the.
Okay, so this is in the Fakeologist forums. Everyone needs to go to the fakeologistforums.com, where Lynn is a prolific poster.
I'm not the only one. We've got some great. I'm telling you, you got some great posters there.
What forum is
amazing stuff there.
Rachel, yeah, Rachel's great. What forum
all
is this?
She's in all the forums. Her stuff is really
no. What forum?
I spend
is
hours reading her stuff. I really am watching.
Oh,
her.
Shout
I
out to Rachel.
Yeah, so, you should get
what?
Well,
what
anybody should
what
do
forum
shirt,
is
should.
This one in? This thread.
Well, where did I put Cult of Yehuda?
Okay,
see, that's the funny thing. Where do you put the Cult of Yehuda? Do you put it in with NASA's space fakery? Because that's one of their ops,
right?
Do you put it in with historical revisionism? Do you put it, you know, where do you put the Cult of Yehuda, right?
They're all over.
Right. So Jack Abramoff.
I'm going to do a quick search and find it on my screen. Okay, Jack Abramoff.
But a very unusual kind of lobbyist. The Jack Abramoff Indian lobbying scandal was a United States political scandal exposed in 2005. So I can't blame you for not remembering the details of this. You're probably real busy raising a family and, you know, driving a rig and doing what you're doing back then. So
I'm still doing it. So I'm barely keeping up now. But okay. I do remember the name.
Related to a fraud perpetrated by political lobbyists Jack Abramoff, Ralph Reed, Grover Norquist, and Michael Scanlon. And all these people were very well known. Ralph Reed was a top advisor to Pat Robertson, 700 Club.
All right.
And also Republican candidate for president, Republican contender for president at one point. Grover Norquist, if you've got anybody, small C conservatives, he's one of these people who wants to make government small enough to drown it in a bathtub. And these people came out of the Reagan era. They were all Reagan era conservatives and rabid Zionists also, but Jack Abramoff in particular, because he made much of being an Orthodox Jew with the black hat and spending millions setting up Jewish schools, raising money for all the Jewish organizations, probably support for Israel. But these individuals, and by the way, Abramoff's roommate at Harvard, I believe, was Ralph Reed. And then later, Grover Norquist. So these guys all knew each other from Harvard. They were classmates at Harvard before they got in the 80s. And they basically pulled off a scam, a heist, really a shakedown, I call it, on Native American tribes who are seeking to develop casino gambling on their reservations. That's why Abramoff came to be called Casino Jack. And the movie, by the way, is a great presentation of this, very accurate, very faithful to the history. The lobbyists charged the Native tribes an estimated $85 million in fees, which was worth a lot more in the 1980s than it would be worth now. Abramoff and Scanlon grossly overbilled their clients, secretly splitting the multi-million dollar profits. In one case, they secretly orchestrated lobbying against their own clients in order to force them to pay for lobbying services. So what they did was, in a place like Mississippi or upstate New York, wherever these reservations were trying to get the law changed so they could, you know, were trying to basically allow casinos to be run on the reservations to make some money, what Abramoff and his pals would do is, on the one hand, they would send in proxies who they controlled in the state legislature to lobby against the Indian tribes, giving them the right to open casinos. Then what Abramoff would do is, and his flunk and Scanlon, they would approach these same tribes and say, hey, don't worry, we can fix it, but it's going to cost you. Can you imagine? So these Native American tribes, most of them, they were like in over their heads. They didn't understand any of this. So here you are, you're creating a false opposition to casinos on the reservation, and then you're going to the Indians and saying, hey, don't worry, we'll take care of it. Pay us. It's a shakedown.
Yeah. As fakeologists, are we sure this is a real story? Because I really can't comment because I know nothing about it.
Well, it went to trial, and he did time.
Okay.
He did his sentence, and I'm about to get to that.
Okay, because you know, that's Trump went to trial too, so this is fakeology.
Yeah, the whole thing. I tell you what, this all happened in the eight. I guess he got caught finally. Well, a couple congressmen were drawn into the scandal, and their careers were destroyed. I think Tom DeLay was one of them. Let's see. In the course of the scheme, the lobbyists were accused of illegally giving gifts and making campaign donations to legislators. These would have been mostly state legislators, wherever the casinos were seeking to be legalized, in return for votes or support of legislation. Representative Bob Ney, Republican of Ohio, and two aides to Tom DeLay, Republican of Texas, were directly implicated, and other politicians also. So it was a big scandal, big scandal. Scanlon and Abramoff both pleaded guilty to a variety of criminal charges related to the scheme. Of course, Abraham was most famous in the Jewish community for founding a whole bunch of Jewish schools, private Jewish schools, and significant fundraising on behalf of Jewish ethnic or religious causes. I don't know if he raised money for Israel. He probably did as well. He got convicted. And he did a few years. What was it? Club Fed? Probably. But then he got out. And this is personal to me because I grew up about 5 miles from where Jack Abramoff got his first job after he got out of prison.
Okay.
Because, you know, he was paroled early, probably had to live at a halfway house, and got a job working at a pizza place right up the road from where I grew up. A kosher pizza place, famous for how terrible its pizza was. I mean, really. These guys.
That's funny.
No one who knew anything about pizza would ever eat pizza there, but it was popular among Orthodox Jews. Abramoff was forbidden by prison authorities to speak on camera. This is after his release, because it was quite a story locally in the Baltimore Sun and in the Jewish Times and various other local media at the time he showed up in Pikesville, Maryland, where he had never lived. He'd never had anything to do with this place, but that's where he decided to go for his parole. But Gibney recruited a rogues gallery of lawmakers and their top aides, lawmakers, augmented by journalists and civic watchdogs, to draw a picture of the man and his complex machinations, blah, blah, blah. What we get is, as one associate observes, is a lobbyist from Central Casting. I'll say that again.
Yeah.
A lobbyist from Central Casting. Good-looking, charming, and intelligent, who from adolescence on had championed hard-line Republican ideology, though he spread some of his favors to Democrats as well. That's how the cult of Yehuda operates. They're bipartisan.
Yeah, they cover it all.
Of services boggle the mind.
Hey, by the way, are you recommending watching this movie? Does it really cover?
Absolutely.
Does it cover everything you're talking about?
Well, not everything. No, it won't cover what I'm about to mention here.
Yeah.
There's just too much for any movie to cover, but it's worth watching anyway. In the course of the scheme, the lobbyists, or blah, 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 blah. Let's see. Okay, here we go. This is what I mean about the cult of Yehuda and shape-shifting and the way in which they cross boundaries. Now, you may not be familiar with the former Malaysian Prime Minister, Mohamed Mahathir.
Yeah, he was the sort of a truther, wasn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, kind of. A little bit. He hinted at it.
Yeah.
He hinted at it.
He was as close as you could get for a world leader.
As close as you could get. Yeah. Right? And he also went after the Zionists. And he said he used to make speeches in the 80s and 90s saying that if Muslims could only get their act together and learn from the Jews and the Zionists, maybe they'd have some influence. But.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
You know that goes.
So he was controversial.
Right. In a film clip, we see Malaysian Prime Minister Mohamed Mahathir denouncing international Jewish conspiracies, though that did not prevent Mahathir from approaching Abramoff, a Jewish lobbyist, with a personal request. In return for a $1 million payment, Abramoff was asked whether he could arrange for Mahathir to meet President George W. Bush for a joint photo. Abramoff could and did. It is hardly a secret that the recent roster of financial manipulators includes, besides Abramoff, such Jewish names as Bernard Madoff and current Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein. I don't know if Blankfein's still running Goldman Sachs or not. In an earlier generation, when the public shame of what, because this was a terrible scandal that Abramoff and Scanlon were involved in. It really was. Because not only were they ripping off, you know, shaking down the Indian tribes for money, but they were taking advantage of some of the most, these Native American tribes, they're the last people in the world to be in a position to navigate the machinations and the corruption and the influence peddling of Washington, D.C. They don't know anything about lobbying. So to take advantage of them and shake them down, oh, it's disgusting. And it was a disgrace. So in an earlier generation, when the public shame of one Jew sent nervous shivers down the collective spine of the entire Jewish community, such numerous revelations might have led to a communal heart attack.
I like that.
Not in
this
case. Not in this case.
Communal as in commune and communist and...
Yeah. Well, that's not what we mean by that. We mean that the Jews as a group...
I know, but they're just...
Should have been in a panic about this.
Yes, I got it.
Just, right. I don't know if AI wrote this article or not. It may be a sign of a certain maturation and heightened sense of security. So far, the Jewishness of the convicted or suspected criminals has been accepted with relative equanimity, both by the Jewish community and the American public at large. And I want to read the statement.
By the way, there is a quote feature in Fakeologist forums. I know you put the word quote and unquote. I don't know if you'd make it to make
it. I kind of do it, yeah. And then I put the link underneath. But
okay.
So here's how the article starts. Once a high-powered Washington lobbyist who hobnobbed with George Bush and other top Republicans, Jack Abramoff is now working at a kosher pizza restaurant in Baltimore, Maryland, in Emerge Today. Abramoff started working at Tov Pizza. Tov is Hebrew for good. Tov Pizza. Totally inappropriate name because this is some of the worst pizza you would ever eat. And I'm not So, I don't even know if this place is still in business.
So you're quoting all mainstream stuff. So you think this is a real story and all that?
People were going there to see him working in the back.
Wow.
He became a tourist attraction there.
Did you go?
So if he was acting, they sure went the distance, didn't they?
Yeah. Did you go?
I went in there with some people, and they said, yeah, he's in the back.
Oh, that's funny.
And he would come in and out. He'd clear the tables. He was doing the shit work there.
Wow. A busboy.
Very visibly.
That's great.
The owner. So here we go. Abramoff started working at Toad Pizza on Monday after his release. What does it matter whether he was really there or not? It's the narrative that counts.
Yeah.
The messaging and the narrative. From prison, immediately after his release, where he had served a 3.5-year sentence for fraud, corruption, and conspiracy. 3.5 years he did in Club Fed. The owner of Tove Pizza, Ron Rosenbluth, told the Baltimore Jewish Times that giving a fellow Jew a fresh start was part of what Judaism stood for. He was happy that Tove Pizza could provide Abramoff with that new beginning, where all Jews were all on the same team, he said. Abramoff reported to a halfway house run by a nonprofit organization, which arranged the job, probably a Jewish halfway house.
Yeah.
The restaurant owner has hired halfway house residents before. They don't fake that stuff. I mean, if they're faking it, they're acting it out. You go there and you see them working there. And I don't think his 3.5-year disappearance from public life doing time was fake either, although he probably wasn't doing hard time because they do have Club Fed. But your whole thing is, well, how do we know this story is real? I'm just telling you the narrative. You can decide whether it's real or not. And you can call the Indian tribes and ask them if they got ripped off of this money or not, because they were pretty hot about it. You can go back and watch the videos of representatives of these Indian tribes just breaking up on camera.
Right, right, right.
So I think the scam was real. I think they really were doing it. Whether he did hard time or soft time, I don't care.
Okay, all right.
The fact that you don't even remember who this guy was, that tells me a lot.
Well, it was more of a mainstream story than I was.
No, it was not just a mainstream story. It was a Jewish story, and it was a corruption story, and it disgraced politicians in Washington. This was one of the most shameful instances of bribery, corruption, and extortion in history.
Well, you have a local bent to it because it's from your area, but you're very plugged into the mainstream media. You follow it closely. And
I follow the narratives because the narratives are messaging. And what's the messaging here?
I agree with that. I agree. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what this character did. And he went on to be... Every time you saw Abramoff in public, he was always wearing that black hat.
Right, right.
And gone to synagogue. Oh, they built him up to be such a Jewish Jew. It was unbelievable. Jews who I knew in Pikesville were humiliated, embarrassed. They thought it was the worst possible thing to bring him there and make such a public thing out of it. No one wanted to be associated with this guy. So, yeah, watch the movie, Casino Jack.
All right. This
I don't
is...
want to spend all night on the
Yeah, no, no. Movie. We've only got, yeah, we're halfway through the show tonight, but that's very
but
good.
But, hey, you know, do you think I've wasted time exploring this case in detail?
No, it's very interesting. I'll watch.
This is how the cult of Yehuda operates here in America.
Okay.
All over the world, probably.
Do you think the cult of Yehuda is in control of America?
Oh, yeah. The tail's definitely wagging the dog, and I'll tell you how I know that.
Okay.
I listened to a C-SPAN Today coverage of a joint press conference by the current defense minister of Israel and Lloyd Austin, who is the Secretary of Defense in the Biden administration.
I remember and, that.
Yeah, this stuff really has evolved over the years because at one time, if you go back to maybe 1970, to the 70s, even right on into the 1980s, of course the United States had all kinds of arrangements with the State of Israel. And certainly the Zionist lobby has always been powerful. But in those days, optics was everything. And the optic that had to be preserved and maintained was the idea that the United States, even though it tended to side with Israel, still postured as being above the conflict and could be what you would call a fair broker. You know, how you would put it, an open, fair-minded broker in any negotiated settlement between the Palestinian Arabs and the Zionists. And so, for example, you had Jimmy Carter sponsoring the Camp David Accords with Begin and Sadat. You had all the time. Clinton administration was really into trying to twist Menachem Begin's arm into negotiating a deal with Yasser Arafat, and Begin hated Clinton for it. And that's probably why they set up the Monica Lewinsky scandal, so that Clinton could no longer apply pressure to the Israelis. I mean, he was finished after that. He wasn't going to have any kind of diplomatic leverage at that point. But the psychology of it is very important to understand. As late as the Clinton administration, the posture of the United States government was still, hey, we're trying to be neutral here. We're the ones who can negotiate a settlement, and we don't want to look like we're favoring the Israelis too much. All that's gone now. Everyone listening to this, you will admit that now the world looks at the United States and Israel and says the tail is wagging the dog.
Right.
And I remember Webster Tarpley used to propagate this idea of Israel as the breakaway ally.
Yeah. Is he still going, Webster Tarpley?
Oh, who knows? He might as well be dead in my book, because he never came around to saying I was wrong about Sandy Hook, or I didn't understand that nobody died on 9/11. He was still towing that line. So I don't.
Okay,
you know.
Yeah. So you stopped listening.
Well, as
to him.
Someone who I really admired, I'd read so many. I've read his. I have his books on my shelf. You know, like a half dozen of his books. And yeah. I knew him from the LaRouche days as well.
Right. Yeah, LaRouche. Okay, yeah. I got that. Yeah.
And to go to that truther meeting, 9/11 truth meeting down there in Silver Spring, back in, this would have been about 2011, 2012. Well, it was after Sandy Hook, obviously. So it might have been as late as, you know, maybe 2015, you know. And have all everybody know that Sandy Hook was a drill and that nobody died. And,
yeah, he was in the LaRouche movement and the 9/11 truth movement, it says here. And he's 77.
Yeah, I have no idea what he's up to now, but I don't, you know, his book, he's got a lot of interesting books, but his book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, is useful because it documents all the drills and exercises that were going on that morning and makes it abundantly clear that 9/11 was a Pentagon operation from top to bottom. The drills and the exercises that were taking place that very morning, right. Some of which were simulating hijackings,
yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
He calls it a
synthetic terror.
False flag operation. I just listened to.
Well, it was false flag. It was false flag.
Well, I just listened to Tim Osmond. He says you can't. There's. It's either fake or it's real. There's he was just on.
Right.
Just
right.
Listening to
fake or real is a tactic. False flag is a strategy.
Right.
Do you understand the difference? Why would you pull off a hoax in order to false flag? Right. False flag is nothing. But an international.
Sorry, he said it's either fake or real. Sorry, I was just listening to Tim Osmond today.
Frame up. Doesn't matter whether it's fake or real. It's a frame up. They're framing somebody. They're blaming somebody for something they didn't do.
Right.
That's violation of the Ninth Commandment. Tim Osmond doesn't mind violations of the Ninth Commandment. He doesn't see anything important about it. As far as he's concerned, it's just a movie and no one's to blame. So if Americans grit their teeth and scream with rage because they think crazy Muslims knocked down our towers, it doesn't matter that it's a hoax. The false flag is manipulating people psychologically. And that is the agenda that the Zionists have. and that the people who wrote the Project for a New American Century had when they said we need a new Pearl Harbor. So basically, Tim Osman doesn't really understand what 9/11 was about. He doesn't understand the role of the Zionists in staging it and the Mossad and how they have their own interests in it. And that means a false.
He was involved in the Trump libel suit. Sounds like that's an interesting one, where he called her a high-end escort prior to meeting.
Yeah, he's very dogmatic. What he's saying essentially is if people call it a false flag, it can be both a false flag and a hoax, can it?
Mm-hmm.
Quickly, answer. Can it be both a false flag and a hoax?
Who said that?
Can it
that?
Be both a false flag and fake? Answer quickly.
It can be a fake false flag, of course.
Right. Well, what's the difference? That's redundant. If it's a false flag, it's fake by definition, right? Whether they kill anybody or hurt anybody or not. Whether somebody trips, whether a crisis actor trips and sprains an ankle or breaks a leg, it's still a false flag.
Right.
Because it's designed to frame someone. And Tim Osman doesn't have a clue what it's like to be subjected to a police frame-up. But I do, because I've seen police plant drugs in the 60s and 70s. I've seen police frame-ups. So I know what a false flag is. And it's perfectly justified for someone to characterize 9/11 as a false flag operation. To blame. I'm going to use that word until people are sick of hearing it. To blame Muslims and Arabs for the controlled demolitions of those towers. And more important, for attacking our Pentagon, where small bombing was staged to simulate an airplane crash.
Yes.
Operation Northwood, very similar to Northwoods.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter whether that was a fake or hoax or not, because that constituted a military attack on the United States, thus invoking the NATO treaty. I shouldn't have to go through this with you. We just wasted 5 minutes on bullshit here. Because this guy is nitpicking over whether people use the word false flag.
Okay.
Do you know how many people I've run into out there that say it was a false? Sure, it was a hoax, but it was also a false flag. And Tim Osman wants to stop and argue with people about that. He's full of shit.
Well,
that's dogmatism.
I still like him, and he's at IPS.monster, and we're going to have back on the show.
It's a good show. Yeah, he wants everybody. Now, you got to use my language. You got to use my words.
Well, he's just proposing language, and he's got a lot of people he influences.
Well,
so
he's saying anybody who says it was a false flag is wrong. Well, what does that say about the Muslims and Arabs who were blamed for it? They don't matter, huh? I think it matters because, for one thing, are they willing to take the rap? How many Muslims and Arabs spoke up and said, we didn't do this?
I know. That's definitely one thing you harp on.
That makes the false flag aspect of this even more important. Even more important. It's like the mafia wanting to take the rap for assassinating a president. Well, if it was all a hoax, why are they want to take the rap for it? See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's a lot more going on here in terms of agendas than simply the event itself. To deny the frame-up aspect of it, the blood libel, the false flag, is basically to gut it of any meaning, of any emotional meaning. And it does have meaning to the people who are being blamed for it. How would you feel if someone falsely accused you of being a pedophile?
Well, that's the end.
Oh, all you got to say, it's a hoax. What do you care? Well, what, you losing any sleep over it? Suppose they fabricate using AI. This is already happening, probably.
Yeah.
Video material or audio material. Suppose they fabricate a phone call.
Oh, that's going to happen more and more.
Imitating your voice on the phone with a 12-year-old girl trying
to
arrange
it. That is going to happen more and more.
It's a hoax. What are you complaining about? It's just a ha ha ha. It's just a hoax. When it happens to you, I'm going to call it a hoax. And you're going to say, no, they're framing me. It's a frame up. I'm going to say, well, it doesn't matter. It's a hoax.
Yeah, and I see your point.
That's Tim Osman's idea. And that's why he's licensed to work for the military. Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's still licensed to work for them. And probably still retains his security clearances. So, but I don't need to get into this argument about is it a false flag or not, because in the case of the cult of Yehuda, it's all about displacement of blame. Something goes wrong. Oh, look over there, not over here. Oh, look over there, not over here. And when you really set somebody up, like, think about the October 7th staged hoax. And think about how Americans and Europeans and Canadians are thinking about Palestinian Arabs relative to Hamas. Why don't you tell them that Hamas is a hoax? They'd ask, well, why would the Zionists be creating a hoax? Well, because it's a false flag operation. It's designed to frame the Muslims and make them look like terror, frame the Arabs, because many Palestinians are not Muslim at all. They're Christian. There are a lot of Christian Palestinians, too.
Right.
But Hamas is a Muslim organization. It's a branch of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right. They were in Egypt, right?
The Muslim Brotherhood won't denounce Hamas as a false flag operation run by Mossad and the IDF is also a big indicator. And therefore, again, reinforces the importance of who is being blamed in this false flag psychological operation. So, you know, Tim Osman doesn't like the phrase false flag because it says outright that the United States military and the Pentagon and the CIA are perfectly willing to frame foreigners for crimes committed here or anywhere, and especially crimes committed against Americans, whether it's a hoax or not. Was the Beirut, the bombing of the Marine barracks in Beirut, which is pretty shocking. I mean, they were claiming like dozens of Marines died in that. If it was all a hoax, if it was just a controlled demolition, Reagan pulled the troops out. It was a big deal.
Right.
I don't know why I should need to explain to people why the nature of the narrative matters when someone is being blamed for a crime. Whether the event is a hoax or not, it's the narrative and the agenda driving the narrative we have to look at, not the details of the hoax. Yeah, it's nice to say, hey, nobody died here, or, you know, maybe somebody sprained a wrist or sprained an ankle, a crisis actor, but this was not really a massacre. But there is an agenda behind it. What is the agenda behind it? To blame someone or something. An AR-15, a Muslim, an Arab, a white racist, a MAGA fanatic, those will be the next people to blame. Was January 6th a false flag operation? A classic false flag operation. Was it a hoax? Yeah, it was a hoax too. Was the property damage done? I don't know. Maybe, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. That's the movie part of it. Okay, we got about 20 more minutes, so make sure you get all your agenda in for tonight, Lynn.
Well, I don't have any agenda. Why don't you decide what we should talk about?
Well, I'm pretty open.
You must have something on your mind, right?
Well, I've been pretty distracted and busy with my little kitchen project here, so that's why I was off last week. And I really appreciate the people that asked where I was. They were looking for the show. I just want to make an announcement for donations, fakeologist.com/donate. If you go to that page, you will see that I have added a mailing address again once more. I've had a few people say, oh, I can't figure out PayPal or Patreon or Subscribestar or Monero or Bitcoin or any of those things. I just want to send you something in the mail. So the mailing address is up here now. And if you do send a check, make it out to cash. I don't know why I didn't think about that in the past, but that's the way to do it. So make sure you can mail it in here at Box 139, 1822 Y0B1 in Canada. So you can mail us in a donation, value for value, that way. And I want to just quickly thank Henrik for his donation. It's been very slow this last month. And also thanking Typo Error, who also made a donation. Typo Error is found on the audio chats, and I really appreciate him. And I've got lots of emails and speak pipes and all kinds of things to talk about. but I usually like to reserve this for Lynn.
Yeah, I posted in the forum a link to a site called Northern Truth Seeker.
Okay.
Of a piece from June of 2022. And it's a very good detailed exposé of the Uvalde, Texas school shooting.
Northern Truth Seeker. Okay.
Yeah, when I posted it on Facebook, immediately Facebook said, uh-uh, they would not let me post any links from Northern Truth Seeker. And you know why? Because Northern Truth Seeker, years ago, has addressed the issue of revisionist history with respect to the Hola hoax.
Okay.
And they may have even published stuff about Ernst Zundel. And Fred Leuchter and David Cole. In other words, Northern Truth Seeker is basically an open platform for attacking official narratives. And so they've been banned from Facebook from the very big, you know, for years now.
Okay, what's the name of this post? Is it under Uvalde somewhere? Probably, right?
It's in the forum.
Yeah,
you're pretty
good at categorizing things.
I've got it. In this case, the category would be...
Facebook wouldn't allow this one. Why?
Right, exactly. That's an important thing to me. If I put up a link and they say, no, we will not, like Veterans Today, which I know is very problematic. They're all kinds of messed up. But they were early on kicked off. You couldn't post any of their links on Facebook years ago. So, yeah, that's important to me when they decide that they're not going to allow something. You know,
I can't believe Uvalde is 2 years old. Wow.
Well, no, right. They're redoing Uvalde this past week, as you know. They had a big, for some reason, it was, they have some ceremony down there? Or why is Uvalde in the news over the last week or two? Is it the anniversary, I guess?
Yeah, June 15th, I think. Well, that was the posting here. From this blog. I don't remember. Thank you. Where did you find this guy? This is pretty good. I'm just reading about Northern Truth Seeker now. He's a 62-year-old Canadian. We should get him on the show.
Yes. Yes.
I've never heard him talk.
I think they're on the same page as us. And I'll bet they use phrases like false flag, but they also use the word hoax. In fact, if we ask them, do you consider 9/11 to be a hoax, a media hoax, they would say, yeah. And then if we said, well, would you also consider it a false flag? They'd say, of course. That's the foreign policy agenda there, to find somebody to blame. So I'm not for creating more division than we need in the movement, as I call it. It's over phrases. You know what this reminds me of? The argument over the Trinity.
Right.
You know, is God, is the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost of the same substance or of a similar substance? Two Greek words, homoousios and homoousios. And the only difference is the iota. The iota is the dot over the I. And Arians and Athanasians, the two branches of Christianity in the 4th and 5th century, massacred each other and martyred each other over this one iota of difference in the translation of this word, homoousios, actually the spelling of it, which in one sense, in one spelling meant of a similar substance, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost are of a similar substance, and with the iota added, I think meant they're of the same substance. That's what this argument over false flag reminds me of. You know, it's like, oh, it is. It's about an iota of difference. But it is more significant than that, because if you completely eliminate false flag from the entire narrative, you're saying nobody's being nobody's being blamed for it. Oh, yes, they are. Is somebody not being blamed for who do most normies believe the official 9/11 narrative, who do they blame for it?
The Muslims, yeah.
Well, is that significant?
Of course.
Is it significant in how they're able to present the October 7th false flag as though it were another 9/11? It's only the false flag aspect of it that makes it credible, right? That makes the narrative believable to people who already believe that they did it on 9/11. So why wouldn't they do the same thing on October 7th in paragliders and golf carts? So, yeah, I you know, I'm not going to argue. Now, I'm going to say it's not enough to call it a false flag. We have to indicate there are crisis actors involved. There's a lot of the fakery, because we're fakeologists.
Yeah.
And that's what I say. Someone says, "Well, what do you think of 9/11? Was it a false flag?" I say, "Yeah, it was a false flag, but that's only half the story. That's a third of the story." They say, "Well, what's the rest of it?" I say, "Well, it was fake. Nobody really died." And that's the hard part to discuss with people. And they say, "Well, what do you mean? How is that possible?" And I say, "It was a movie made for TV news." You know, and don't tell me that movies don't do false flagging, because all you got to look at is the history of Hollywood films on terrorism, like Blue Thunder. And there's so many Hollywood movies that always show Arabs and Muslims to be crazy terrorists.
And that was Germans before. So,
before that, it was the Germans. Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that concept of frame up, of a police frame up, a false flag is the equivalent of a police frame up. It's a direct violation of the Ninth Commandment. Thou shalt not bear false witness. We've discussed my strong feelings about this, because to me, it's a blood libel. And anyone who simply wants to trivialize it or dismiss it, and especially dismiss the millions of Americans who now know what a false flag is, which is a significant advance for them, as people we shouldn't be reaching out to explain why it's a lot easier from a logistical standpoint to hoax it than to do it for real. That was the problem we had with Webster Tarpley. How to convince Webster Tarpley that Sandy Hook was a hoax? He could understand it on the level of a kind of of a frame-up more than a false flag. There, they're not blaming foreigners. I guess they're blaming the AR-15, and they're blaming young people that aren't being monitored or surveilled. I mean, there is a false flag there. They are incriminating young people, basically. I mean, what's his face? Who is Adam Lanza, the alleged perp in Sandy Hook. They were using him as a symbol of young people his age, especially young white males with the bowl cut. They showed him with the bowl cut. Hey, Tim Osman, if you're so obsessed with white guys with bowl cuts, what the hell do you think a false flag is when they put that picture out there? That's not just a hoax. They're framing up an entire population. Maybe it doesn't bother you, bothers me. It is bearing false witness. So I don't want to beat it to death.
Yeah, well, leave Tim Osman alone, because he's not here to defend. Does this Northern Truth Seeker have a podcast? I'm just looking here on his site.
They used to be on RBN.
Oh, is that right?
And I don't know whether he even still puts it out. I mean, I don't know. That was from 2022. But this was a 10 years ago, at least, Northern Truth Seeker was definitely on to 9/11.
Okay, so you've been following this guy for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because I think I got into them because they were dealing with the World War II and Pearl Harbor and these things. Yeah, they were dealing with that.
Oh, okay.
Very, very, at a very advanced level. So, you know, I appreciated that, and that's why I posted that link.
Okay.
I don't know if there's more here that I have some rather controversial material here on the Jesus narrative of the gospel and whether he faked his own death. Because, by the way, that's what the Holy Quran says, that he faked his death. You can all check that out. That's in the forum. And I also have a link to a movie based on a novel from 1965 called The Passover Plot.
Okay. This is on the forums?
Yeah, it's all in the forum under the cult of should be under the cult of Yehuda, because I regard the Jesus Christianity to be an Abrahamic cult. It's not the cult of Yehuda; it's the cult of Christus, which is a Greco-Latin cult intended to get Jews to behave themselves, pay their taxes, and be good, peaceful Roman citizens, as Joe Outwill has explained to us.
Right, right.
So I have a lot of that here.
We should have you on with Joseph Atwell. That could be interesting.
Oh, wow. I'd be like my professor or something. I have my professor, you know. Yeah, and we could talk about Shakespeare, too.
Maybe I should invite. Maybe I'll invite him on next Tuesday or something. Maybe he'd come on.
He's got a lot to talk about, so.
Yeah, maybe you could ask him some questions, and I could sort of just
right.
sit in the background.
Meanwhile, I think you all enjoy Casino Jack.
Okay.
I think it's a very accurate representation, but really, in a sense, there's hardly enough time in a 90-minute movie to deal with everything that Jack Abramoff was involved in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they really could have focused on Ralph Reed and Grover Norquist and Michael Scanlon. Scanlon in particular, who was his co-conspirator, because these are really some dirty people, and they're not Jewish. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you want to see what Goyim are involved as well, if you want to be fair about it, right? I mean, you know, they're his partners.
Now, there's another guy I posted. I'm trying to get a hold of this guy. Sean Ross. Have you ever heard of this guy? He talks about Pharaoh. He's saying all these cults in control go back to Pharaoh.
Well, maybe they go back to Babylon. I mean, come on. They go back to Babylon.
Yeah, well,
the Jews themselves they have two Talmuds. Talmud Yerushalami, which is Talmud Yerushalam, which is a Jerusalem Talmud, and Talmud Bavli, which is the Babylonian Talmud. That's the Aramaic.
Let me see if I can play this guy. Here's a clip when he's on with Roseanne.
So now Egypt, that's more like, you know, ancient aliens or something, really. Come on.
So I'll play this here.
Judaism comes from Babylon. Okay?
Okay.
Alexandrian Judaism is very, very different. That's Greek Judaism. And that doesn't really exist much anymore.
Okay, listen to this clip. I'll just play it here.
Fell on May 18th, 1291. That was the end of the Crusades. So only 2.5 months' time, 2.5 months later, just the time to come back, they founded Switzerland on August the 1st, which is a national holiday, 1291. So, of course, and if you look at the Swiss flag, red and white, of course, the notorious Templar's treasure came into Switzerland, with which they founded the Swiss banks. So the bankers are not the Jews, as so many people say so. The first bankers who invented the banks, who invented the check, who were the first multinationals, they were the Knights Templars. And they are aristocrats from Pharaoh. And,
okay, so have you ever heard of that? Have you heard of this guy?
Connecting the Templars to the Pharaohs of Egypt. It's kind of tenuous because, you know, they came out of France and they established themselves. They were called the Templars because they supposedly established their headquarters in Jerusalem at what they thought had been the Temple of Solomon, but not really. No one knows that for sure.
Right.
As far as their role in the establishment of international banking and the creation of demand deposit accounts, which is the check, well, that might be true. But of course, remember that the cult of Yehuda, he's talking about 1291 and the formation of the cantons of Switzerland by the Templars. Also, they would have shown up in Scotland at the Battle of Bannockburn in 1314 with Robert Bruce.
Well, I'd like you to listen to this guy. See what
but
you
remember
think.
That the cult of Yehuda was operating for 1,000 years before that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, the Templars probably learned a lot, you know, from them.
Okay.
You know, they maybe westernized it and Europeanized it. You know?
I'm just trying to piece this together. It's not easy.
Yeah, no, it's a good balance. You know, the Templars are important because that's where Freemasonry comes from. And Freemasonry is, it's a branch of the cult of Yehuda. Right? Christianity, Islam, Freemasonry. They all come out of the cult of Yehuda, don't they?
Right, yeah.
Right. Christianity is about the Messiah, the Mashiach ben David, Messiah, the son of David, of the line of David. These were Jewish kings. under Jewish law, you couldn't be king in Judea, unless you were of the line of David. The Passover plot gets into that. If that's another movie people might want to watch. They made the movie in 1976, and it's all right. It's got a decent cast in it. The idea behind that is that Jesus was given certain medicines by his brother, James, who was an expert in pharmacopoeia, or pharmakia, whatever it's called. So they were able to fake his death on the cross, and then they took him down and revived him. They don't say what happens from there, but that wouldn't be inconsistent with the Muslim view of Jesus that you can read in the Quran, that someone else, that basically it was simulated, is what they say. They put someone else up there instead of him. You know, that's a whole other argument. But all of this springs from the cult of Yehuda, all of it, and even the Templars. One thing that's always mystified me, or maybe not mystified me, but intrigued me about the Templars is, you know what their emblem was? The logo of the Templars was two knights riding on a single horse.
Right.
Now, I don't know. That's probably... I hope that's not like a homoerotic reference, right? Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
The horse you came in on. You know?
Ride the horse. All right. Well, we're going to close it out, Lynn. You gave me a lot of stuff to think about tonight. I appreciate that. So check out this guy, Sean Ross. I'm trying to get him on the show.
I think, you know, it's he's getting into the Templars and the Swiss, and you ought to get him on with Jan Erik.
I know. Well, he was on, Rick from the audio chats on the weekend recommended a podcast he did with Melissa, who was the wife of Alan Watt from Cutting Through the Matrix. So that's how that goes. One guy leads to another. So I'm trying to get Sean on for July 1st, but he says he's homeless and he can't commit to a time. He can't commit to a platform.
Oh, my God. What is this?
He said the Swiss are after him, so.
Oh, whoa.
I know. It's pretty heavy duty, so.
The Swiss are pretty interesting because they never had religious wars. Well, they did kind of briefly, but they resolved the Catholic-Protestant thing.
All right.
And they were the only ones in Europe to do that. So it's really strange. Very strange.
Well, yeah, he's an interesting character for sure, so I really want to get him on. Make sure you go to FakoTube and listen to these podcasts he did. One with Melissa, and he did another one with Roseanne, of all people.
And, Roseanne Barr?
Roseanne Barr, yeah.
Yeah, so, I've listened to some of her. She's a little bit she's kind of naive, but...
Yeah. Well, that's all right. She's still... People love her, for sure, so... Yeah, and she has a huge following, so... All right, Lynn, thanks a lot for all your work on the Fakeologist forums. Everyone should join Lynn and check out her work. She's putting a lot of stuff there. We're not on Feces Book anymore because I can't get on, and I can't waste my time on that. But I know Lynn...
Well, I'm on there every day. We have a lot of followers on Facebook. We do.
Is that right?
And they also come out... Are you saying they shouldn't be on Facebook anymore?
They can do whatever they want, but I can't get on it, so I don't go there.
Facebook has locked you out. Is that, you can't even look at it.
Many times, so I just don't bother anymore, to be honest. I got my own platform, so as long as you're over there tending the forest, that's fine.
Yeah, if you want some time, I'll screen share and show you what we're posting up there, because it has a pretty wide reach. I also post on Twitter. I post. I always post links to FakoTube everywhere.
I appreciate that. What's
Reddit?
Your
I post them on Reddit.
What's your name on Twitter? Do I follow you on Twitter?
I'm called Brilliant Mammoth. I don't know why they call. Well, wait a minute. On Twitter? No, I'm Lynn Ertel on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter, I think.
Okay. I don't remember.
But on Reddit, I'm called Brilliant. They gave me the name Brilliant Mammoth for some reason. I don't know why. They give you a name on Reddit.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I don't understand how that works, but
All right, everybody, remember fakeologist.com/donate. It's value for value. If you like this show, make sure you pay whatever you think it's worth to you.
I meant what I said about Rachel in the forums. If you can, she might not want to come.
She's
shy.
I think
she's in the UK.
She is in the UK, 5 hours
she
difference.
She really is on top of everything going on there. I mean... She's actually, she's on top of just about any subject I can think of.
Yeah, she is very good.
So I feel like it's a waste not, you know, not bringing her on. I don't know. That's an
underutilized talent. Rachel, if you're listening, she listens sometimes. Rachel, come on and explain some of your posts. That would be great.
Oh, yeah. Her material on the forum, endless hours. I've spent so many hours, and it's all relevant. It really is really very, very relevant. Anyway, maybe we can co-opt her into coming on. You know.
Well, shout
out. I know she's a big fan of, I guess, the Lancaster football team because she sports that red rose of Lancaster as her avatar.
Okay, I did not know that.
Yeah, familiar with the bloody wars of the roses. The House of Lancaster had the red rose. The House of York had the white rose. Then when the Tudors came in and took over, they created something called the Tudor rose, which is both red and white. That's a whole other story, the Tudors, because they established banking in England and the enclosure movement driving.
Rachel has made 4,000 posts.
Yeah,
wow.
All interesting. Yeah.
Wow, she has one post that has 42,000 views.
She's the empress of the forums there, really.
Wow, shout out to Rachel. Wow.
And I'm glad because that's what these forums are for, the kind of stuff that she's putting out there. It's really good. Really good. It'll take you really down. I don't mean down rabbit holes, but it'll really take you down some highways, you know, some new highways you might never have seen, especially with respect to something like British politics. She's making predictions. She thinks that Labour's going to take over and this guy Starmer they're going to put in there, who's a lifetime actor, but that's a whole other story.
Well, it's either with one party or the other, so it's just like...
Well, yeah, but there are subtle differences.
Yeah, what I'm saying is there's only two real parties in every country, let's be honest. So Canada...
Well, in the UK, they used to have the Liberals. Also,
okay.
Third party.
Well, our Liberals here used to be real Liberals, but now they're just sort of communists, so... Sort of the same thing.
Whatever that means. I'm not sure what that means.
All right, Lynn, thank you for joining in, and thanks everyone else for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow with Fake Nukes Phil for an update on the Rubber Babies and maybe even Jim Rizzoli for an update on his heart. All right, thanks, Lynn. We'll see you next week.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
What can I do? When with 20 tongues she swears that she's true. As I walk along the parkwood road, an independent air, could hear the golden glare, but be a mirror, could hear them sigh and wish that I would see them wink to the other eye, and the man who wrote the bank at Monte Carlo. As I walk along the parkwood road, with an independent air, could hear the golden glare, but be a mirror, could hear them sigh and wish that I would see them wink to the other eye, and the man who wrote the bank at Monte Carlo.